Everybody knows that the most successful baseball and basketball players make a lot of money. But how many people know that international athletes can make a killing in darts, badminton, cricket, and rugby? The current issue of ESPN, the magazine titled All About the Money, features articles, charts, lists, and anecdotes providing a global perspective on sports and money. Joining me now is the editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, Gary Belsky. Gary, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for having me. It is only a game, but it's often a very well-compensated game.
Boy, the magazine certainly demonstrates that. One of your tables lists the most highly compensated athlete in each of 181 countries. Were you and your colleagues surprised to find that in 113 of those 181 countries, the athlete was a soccer player?
Yes and no. Yes, when we tabulated the numbers and realized that the highest paid athlete in 180-odd countries, 60% of them or so were soccer players, we were surprised. No, because as soon as we saw the number and realized that, of course, soccer is the big global sport, and that's where a lot of the money is, and that's where a lot of the talent from many countries goes to make their money, we felt like we should have predicted it. But there's a lot of other sports represented, too, obviously. There's out of 180 countries, there were 113 soccer teams, but also 17 basketball players, 12 baseball athletes, six racers, and so on. There was even a yachter from New Zealand, by the way, I think.
The table also lists the average per capita income in each of the 181 nations. NBA player Samuel Dellembert, who earns over $12 million a year playing in the NBA, is a native of Haiti, where the average per capita income is $626. And that's not the only example of an extraordinarily wide income gap, is it?
No, exactly. Stéphane Cessignon, who plays soccer for Sunderland in the EPL, he makes about $2.8 million, and this is just an annual salary. It's not in endorsements. He makes about $2.8 million a year, and the per capita GDP in Benin, where he's from, is $739.
What led you to include the per capita income column in the chart?
Because we thought very smart and handsome radio show hosts would notice that and talk about it. Honestly, that's why we did it. We thought that, you know, when people are interested in sports and money and in athletes and money, they're often interested in it because of a relative notion of wealth, right? People often talk about what athletes and entertainers make and then sort of start talking about what teachers make or what sanitation workers make. And we obviously wanted to sort of highlight that idea. By the way, we're of the belief here that there's nothing new under the sun. In the introduction to the whole package, we made the observation that arguably the richest, most successful athlete in the world monetarily in history was a chariot racer from 2,000 years ago who's got a monument to him in Italy now. And in it, on the monument, it indicates that he made enough money in his career to feed the Roman army, the Roman League, an entire Roman army for 1 year. Basically, he made the equivalent of $15 billion over the course of his career. So people have been paying athletes a lot of money, excess amounts, for a long time because the skills are rare and what they do is fun to watch.
If tennis great Kim Clijsters had made $5.5 million last year instead of just over $5 million, she would have been the most highly paid athlete in Belgium, but she wasn't.
And the only woman to make the list.
That's what I was going to say. Did any other woman even come close to being the highest paid athlete in her country?
I think the answer is sort of no. Certainly in the United States, there's a lot of sort of well-paid women, but nobody that comes close to, Venus Williams, people like that, but nobody that comes close to what A-Rod makes. So the answer is I couldn't go down to all 180 countries and tell you whether or not there was somebody in Mauritania who made as much as the soccer player Pascal Gourville. But for the most part, women's compensation is still far below that of men.
You also included a list of the best-paid athletes in 30 sports.
That was my favorite list.
It's a great list. Who knew that it was possible for somebody to make over $1 million a year playing darts or riding bulls or over $200,000 a year in competitive eating?
Exactly. You can also make close to $500,000 a year being a sumo wrestler. And you can make $500,000 a year riding rodeo and $300,000 a year playing racquetball. There's a lot of ways to make money in sports that's just not about playing the Big Six or Big Ten sports. I mean, we're talking, we did this list obviously because we wanted to go pretty deep into what people think of as professional athletes. You know, by the way, it's interesting. What got us actually to think about this whole entire list thing in the issue was something from the census, the U.S. Census, that said that there's, I forgot the number, but essentially the average pay for a professional athlete in the United States is like $70,000 or $60,000. That's because there are tens of thousands of professional athletes in the United States. You know, much a greater number than you would think when you just think about, you know, baseball, football, hockey, basketball, minor league baseball, a couple of other sports. You know, you sort of think like, oh, there's probably like, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 people who are making their living playing professional sports. There's quite a bit more than that, actually.
I'm speaking with Gary Belsky, the editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, and you're listening to Only a Game. The most successful athletes do make a lot of money, of course, but All About the Money also demonstrates that there are a lot of very expensive things on which athletes can spend and lots of scams of which they need to be very wary. What are some of those?
The things they spend money on are pretty much anything and everything. It's about exclusivity, right? We talk about, it's expensive for me to fly somewhere, but it's more expensive for athletes because they want to fly in absolute comfort and in privacy. So they will get a NetJets membership, which allows them to sort of participate in the whole world of private jet flying, and that can cost tens of thousands of dollars a year. But the much more interesting parts for us than the how much athletes spend on crazy things is how vulnerable athletes are to being ripped off by the people who are allegedly or presumably trying to help them. In general, there's stories all the time. We chronicle one in depth, but we also talk about the more notorious stories in which athletes who don't know very much about finances, mostly because they've been insulated from having to know very much about finances, not because they're not smart, but because somebody's always taking care of it for them, and they fall victim to shady operators, agents, business managers, things like that. I always like to tell people the story. This was a great issue. The single most amazing or the most profound financial-related story we've ever done in the history of the magazine, in my opinion, was a piece we did in the first year in 1998 about Ron Artest. Mm-hmm. And in it, we took Ron Artest, we put him on a playground in Kingsbridge in Queens where he grew up, and we surrounded him with all the people who he was supporting with his rookie salary. And there was about 40 people there, and Artest, who is he's a bit of a quirky personality, but he's a really honest guy. As a kid, as a rookie, he sort of went through everybody on that court in the picture and said, here's what I give them, you know, $40,000 to my friend who's a barber, $25,000 for this guy who's my buddy who's a driver, my uncle gets $60,000 for being my cook, whatever the case may be, right? And the reason why that story was important to us here at ESPN the magazine was we realized something profound, which was that when athletes, at least a lot of athletes in a lot of sports, when they talk about wanting to go from $6 million a year to $10 million a year because they need to take care of their family, and a lot of people and a lot of sports writers roll their eyes and say, how much do you need to take care of your family? Well, you need a lot when your definition of family is so broad and generous. Everybody wants to go to the easy trope of, oh, athletes make too much money or they're all greedy, when in fact they're often some of the most generous people in the world because they're supporting dozens and dozens of people. And sometimes they get ripped off because they're too trusting.
Gary Belsky is the editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, the current issue of which is titled All About the Money. Gary, thank you very much for speaking with me.
My pleasure.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Harvard University, whose summer school has courses for high school, college, and adults to earn academic credit and experience campus life, summer.harvard.edu, and Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. This is NPR.
The Redfish Roundup in Florida is an unusual competition because the idea isn't to catch the largest fish, it's to catch the redfish with the largest number of red spots on its body. This is truly a competition in which size doesn't matter, unless it does. No redfish shorter than 18 inches can qualify for the $7,500 prize, no matter how many spots it sports. But a fish that measures just barely 18 inches if you pull on its tail is okay, and that's what Otis Chauncey hauled in last weekend. In fact, though Mr. Chauncey's fish was the smallest one examined by the judges, the little winner wore no fewer than 27 red spots. After the competition, the red-faced Mr. Chauncey was spotted giggling.
Looks like, honey, we're gonna roll in late because of too much beer and not enough bait.